welcome back to Beyond the Couch with Bridges Mental Health. I'm Christy, and I'm really excited to chat with two of our Bridges clinician community members, who are two therapists, Tiffany and Nita, today. So I will give you all space to introduce yourself.
Thank you for the introduction, Christy. Hi, everybody. I'm Tiffany. I am half Japanese, half American white. I'm comfortable with either. And I entered the mental health space only recently, actually. I used to work in management consulting, so it was quite a bit of a change, but I'm happy to be here and appreciative of Bridges Mental Health.
Hi, everyone. I'm Nita. It is a pleasure and honor to be here with Bridges and alongside with Tiffany. I am Indian American, born and raised in the U.S. to parents who immigrated from India back in the 70s. The clinical work is new-ish to me. I did train in an MSW and did more of a macro level program development and grant writing, and always appreciated the client interface, so became more interested in one-on-one psychotherapy.
So we both work for a group practice called A Good Place Therapy. We met through work. And we are both licensed in both California and New York. So through that kind of connection and our connection through our identities, of course, also, we have worked closely together and our colleagues.
Tiffany and Nita are also excited to share about other topics that they tend to see in their work and are also passionate about around the APISA community. So just to give you all a sense of who they are, we're inviting them to share more around their identity stories. So whoever would like to start, I'd love to hear more.
I can start. So as I mentioned earlier, I'm half Japanese. I actually grew up in Tokyo. So I lived there until I was 18. And I moved to the US. And I lived here in the US for the first time for undergrad. And I was living in California at the time. Of course, I had visited the US, you know, multiple times over the course of my life because my father is from the Midwest. But college was the first time I actually lived here. I went to an American school. So my schooling was very US-based, US culture. And then I lived in Japan. So I would go to school, be kind of in this American culture, and then step outside of school. And I was in a very homogeneous Japanese society. And then at home, I had both parents, both influences, so it was very mixed. I speak to my mom in Japanese, I speak to my dad in English. And so I've kind of been navigating both cultures and identities for my whole life.
It's really interesting when I listen to Tiffany, because it was almost the similar experience, but on different soil. So as I mentioned, I was born and raised in the US, in Pennsylvania. So immigrant parents who predominantly spoke in native tongue of a mix of Hindi and Punjabi, but I would answer in English, but retained it, you know, sort of in terms of the comprehension piece of it, would make frequent trips to India to visit extended family, grandparents, cousins, and such, pretty much annually. So what was interesting from my experience was the cultural traditions were included in my family life here in the US, although my parents were sort of the pioneers of each of their families coming over and aspiring to the American dream, as it was called back then, of autonomy and independence. So while we had cultural traditions and norms practiced at home and were, you know, further practiced back in the homeland of India, there was also a push to adhere to societal US norms, which were maximizing individual gains or the best interests of the individual versus the family status and family representation. And the number 18 rings a bell, as Tiffany was saying. That's when I went to undergrad, and I moved from a predominantly white suburban area to an urban university environment, and really just took solace in meeting other like-minded individuals who were children of immigrant parents, and sort of remained urban ever since then.
It's interesting because when I hear Nita describe her trajectory, mine is actually kind of, like she said, on different soil and also kind of opposite. Because when I went to California for undergrad, I was going to like a very suburban, you know, American college town. And I had come from American schooling, so I didn't expect there to be such a big kind of cultural shock. But when I got here, it was a major cultural shock. And I think the first time that I really kind of had this reckoning of I'm not like the people around me and I'm something different. And I think that's for me the first time I felt a big cultural shock.
Yeah, Tiffany, I'm curious if there are any immediate details or memories that are coming up around this cultural shock.
The first thing that comes to my head is like, there were a lot of like white women who were from a lot of like Western states, California, Oregon, Washington. And like, they were all very kind people and everything. And also they were kind of similar to what Nita was pointing to, very individualist, very much adhering to this US white cultural kind of ideals, right? You speak up for yourself, you go against authority, you can say your piece, you know, what's going to be best for you. And that wasn't what I had known, right? You fall in line with everybody around you, right? This stereotypical, the nail that's sticking out gets hammered down. So it was just very uncomfortable, I think, for me to feel like I had to be this person that I didn't identify with and I didn't feel like. And also I was confused because I had been in American schooling for 18 years. Why am I so, you know, confused, I guess.
Wow. Yeah. Both of you, it sounds like, experienced that sort of straddling between two worlds geographically as you've moved between continents, but also feeling that difference even in the home.
Yeah, that's one of the interesting differences. As Tiffany was talking, I was thinking about how I was almost in that subculture prior to when Tiffany got to the US, being predominantly in a suburban area dominated by, you know, predominantly white identified folks. I felt as though parts of my image were based on how I reacted to certain environment. There was one thing to be part of a group of family friends of folks that whose parents had also immigrated over, and I could be a more casual version of myself. But when I was concerned with the majority in my upbringing, I almost felt sometimes that I was not enough or maybe small or invalid because I felt categorized as other.
For me, I think there's a very strong concept of like the other, the foreigner. We call it gaijin in Japanese. So you're not like us, you're different. And I think in a suburban setting, both in the US and in Japan, I think in both situations, I would feel like the other. And I think there's more chance of feeling like not the other when I'm in an urban setting that has more different kinds of people.
I don't necessarily have the same experience as both of you, but I'm just thinking about like both of my parents are Korean, but I can still feel that piece of otherness or not fully belonging between more Korean spaces versus more American spaces. But I'm imagining you all feel that to a heightened degree as you're navigating across like more homogeneous countries and entire communities instead of just like different spaces within the US. I'm wondering actually what it's like for you all to then go to India or be in Japan. I wonder if there's like Western senses people can get from you all, or if there is that kind of reaction around individualist values, if those things do feel like you have adopted them over time.
That's really interesting. I think going to India, you know, all those years, especially those formative years, you get a sense of collective. And it just comes with the territory naturally. You know, you feel as though, speaking to my earlier point, there is a sense of true belonging. What's interesting, Tiffany used the word foreigner. I would be perceived as a foreigner even visiting India. But growing up here in the States, it was still sort of that other. But I think, you know, being in the States, there's more of a push to crave acceptance, if you will, or approval. So I think there certainly was less of that back in India, because I think when I felt like I was going back to the homeland, even though I was seen as a foreigner, because you're coming from the US, you're almost on this pedestal. So you're looked at as, you know, an esteemed individual in the collective unit.
Yeah, I grew up in Japan, so I think my perspective is a little bit different because I never really went back to the homeland. But I do think that in Japan, if I don't speak and I'm just walking around, I think people wouldn't really notice. But the moment I'm talking or the way that I carry myself, the way that I speak, it's very obvious that I'm not the same. And it's kind of both and. Both, there's this esteem, oh, you're half, you're... You know, you have these Western experiences and also you're other. So you're not treated the same, both well and not well.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Nita, does that feel relevant for you too?
So relatable. I am having flashbacks of like running to the nearest boutique in India and putting on traditional clothing that I could get my hands on. So I was like, I'll just, you know, see if I can sort of blend in. And I thought I did, but it's different, right? You walk differently, you carry yourself differently. So especially from a identified gender for specific role. So what Tiffany was saying is the both and the and really resonates with me.
I think another relevant story that I really think about often actually is that I went to India because one of my friends is from India. So me and my other friend who's from San Francisco went to India together. And my friend from San Francisco goes, wow, everybody looks the same. And I was like, we're in India. And she was like, I came from San Francisco and San Francisco is all I know. And everybody looks different in large cities. And I just, that comment stuck with me ever since then, 10 years ago, because it's an entirely different experience to grow up somewhere where everybody looks the same. And then to be somewhere where there's so much diversity.
Mm-hmm. That's super interesting. I'm thinking about, you know, all those annual pilgrimages to India during summer vacation, because that's when the chunk of time you have off where it's sweltering hot, but that's the time you get to go. You know, both my parents from a particular state in northern India, what I realized was that those were also two suburban areas. It wasn't until I was older, until I started visiting the urban areas of India, the Mumbai, New Delhi, that I was like, huh, okay, people do look different in these larger urban areas.
All of this, you know, identity conversation, I think ties into what we see with our clients, because a lot of clients struggle with holding multiple cultures and identities. And I think one of the big conversation topics that often comes up as relates to Asian culture, I mean, Asian broadly speaking, is achievement and the importance of being achievement oriented. And of course, for me, that's true. And I think that a lot of people can relate to that. This, you know, you need to be this X, Y, and Z profession, otherwise you're not as good as everybody else. And I think what I think about as like a bicultural, biracial person is that it's difficult for people to, I think, reconcile the message of, you know, what does achievement mean? Because are we talking about achievement for myself? Are we talking about achievement for the family? Are we talking about achievement for society, right? When we're straddling this line between individualist culture like the US and then more collectivist culture, there is a struggle between, am I achieving something for myself? Is that what's valued? Or am I achieving something for somebody else? And is that what's valued? Does that make sense?
Yeah, that definitely hits home in terms of, I mean, it is a huge theme of South Asian households. And I think achievement typically is based on the family status and representation, not for the individual, which, you know, it's very paradoxical because somebody could pursue a medical degree because that's their interest, right? And they want to become a doctor, but becomes like, that's our brand. That's our essence as a family. We have a doctor in the family. So there's a lot of struggle between South Asian Americans where the entitlement piece is on the best interest of themselves. I think it becomes tricky when they start thinking about, does that go into sacrifice? You know, my parents came out here, they left home, they aspired to autonomy and independence. So they, because of their sacrifice, perhaps I should keep up the status of the family representation and perhaps put my needs on hold. And from a personal standpoint, growing up, as I mentioned, one of the few Asian, South Asian families, achievement orientation, I think it's come a long way, but it was a common linkage to others who had immigrated over, checking in, who's going to what school, what are they studying, you know, and sort of that sense of self-worth kind of became contingent on the comparison.
I wonder what you all see if like the impact of being compared as a big part of growing up, what that can really feel like.
Yeah, I mean, I think it has a massive impact, right? Because when, let's say in the case that your passion is in line with what your family wants, that's one thing. And then there starts to become a very difficult inner turmoil and conflict when your passion is not in alignment with what your family has told you is important. So these questions arise, right? Am I not good enough to do what they want? Am I bad for wanting something else? Right? Shame, guilt, confusion, all of these kind of self-worth questions start to arise. And then the longer this plays out, I think the more intense it becomes within you. If you decide to go through the route of, okay, I'm going to do what my parents say and become, like, let's say a doctor, then there's this internal struggle. I don't want to do this, but I'm doing it. If you don't do that, then you're in this struggle of, I'm doing something I like, but my parents don't approve of me. It feels like a lose-lose situation, right? Hmm. And I think a lot of the clients I see, at least, struggle with this exact kind of conflict. And part of all of this is recognizing that these feelings are valid and real, and this struggle is real. And it makes sense that these people are feeling this way because of the differences. And I think that we as a society don't talk enough about how negatively that can impact the individual.
I totally agree with you, Tiffany. I think certain themes that come up is, why would a parent who I typically saw as an authority figure, why are they breeding resentment, right? And it comes down to, okay, perhaps I pursued something here in the States that my parents didn't support. And there becomes this work then about, that was authentic to me. Those were my needs and wants, you know? And so how do I find peace within the choice that I make, even though it causes this turmoil, to use Tiffany's word, or this inner conflict? So I think that the external motivation is just to keep the family status elevated. And while that level of success or achievement may be important, I think what's left of those folks who aspire to that is feelings of sort of emptiness. You know, what have I done, something that's really nourished me or fed me in a way that I'm intrinsically motivated, that I really am being honest with what it is that I want?
This conversation is very nuanced and depends on the person, right? And I think that's what therapy can be really helpful for, people to understand and, you know, explore, what is that balance that feels right for me? What are my values? What are my family's values? What are the values that society is telling me I should have, but I struggle with, right? All of these kinds of conversations, I think, is important for people to really start thinking about.
Yeah, I love that you speak to that, Tiffany, because I'm thinking of some clients who will come in and share that their parents are the most important people ever to them in the world and will always be. And the hope of their life is to honor the sacrifices that they made and take care of them. And they're totally at peace with it. Mm-hmm. And it's incredible for people to come in with that sense of knowing. And they often have stories too about sharing their values in this way and maybe getting a response from other people in their life or even a therapist who doesn't quite understand those values and saying, well, let's move you over into this more individualist world and let's try to work on that and set boundaries and stop being so codependent with your parents or your family. I wonder if you all see some things like that in your work as well.
Yeah, I keep coming back to this idea of balance, right? What's the balance that feels best for me? And then if once the person is able to kind of, you know, explore and experiment and identify what that looks like, then we can have a conversation about, okay, how do we actualize this? And what is necessary? Are boundaries necessary? If not, then we don't need to have that conversation, right?
That is a huge piece for folks to maybe, for the first time, give voice to, hey, this is the messages that I got growing up. You know, these were the values I subscribed to. I was born into this narrative. I don't necessarily agree with all of it. So I'm here to try to make those edits. And really understanding what are the values that they subscribe to now in terms of integrity for their character. And I think just the word sacrifice has me thinking about the work in therapy as typically in South Asian American households, there was no concept of boundary setting. What I say to folks who feel as though they are being individualistic and maybe not honoring family status based on their authentic wants and needs is that, you know, you can look at the sacrifice for your parents, you know, coming over and settling here. Well, you can also look at it as courageous and brave, right? Navigating a new country, mostly without any guidance for many of them, my parents and many of their friends included. So, you know, taking that from a strengths-based perspective, holding on to that courage and feeling empowered to make your own shifts, however small they may be.
I actually love that because it takes so much courage and bravery to do something that you want to do that isn't in line with the narrative that you were born into.
Maybe immigrant parents won't quite understand if people make different decisions. And maybe that's also some part of the intention of their moving into a new culture or moving to the US and wanting that opportunity for their children and for future generations, even if there might be a lot of discord or misunderstanding or struggle between those two generations, if that makes sense, of kind of honoring their decision and the courage that they exercised and choosing to really value what feels most joyful and authentic for us as well.
Yeah, that's well said. It makes me think about, you know, the uncertainty that, you know, they braved then to, you know, make the journey. And there's risk in there. There's also a huge level of trust. Can you apply it to yourself?
As we slowly start to wrap up, I'm curious around speaking to both of your being from an East Asian experience versus a South Asian experience that could be helpful to speak to, as well as like coming to the US and then just being all grouped in as Asian when there's so much diversity and importance about how different people who are clumped in as the Asian term actually are.
For me, I think what you just said is what's important. This, like when we say Asian, that's very diverse and broad. Like my experience in Japan is going to be very different from Nita's experience, like whenever she went to India, right? Like the cultures are different, the language is different, the nuances are different. And I can't speak to this because it's not my experience, but I think the immigration experience from those different Asian countries to the US is also going to look very different. And based on where in Asia you're from, you look different and the way you're treated is going to be also different. I wish that that would be more of a normative thing to say, you know, oh, Japanese or oh, Korean, oh, Indian, right?
Right. Yeah, no, that's a great point. I think that's why it's so important in our practice. You could have three South Asian clients back to back, but, you know, what were their particular messages? Not to group them as just, hey, self-disclosure, I was born and raised here too, probably, or making assumptions that they had the same messages growing up, because it looks completely different depending on different areas where their parents immigrated from. Just as we're talking about, you know, suburban California, suburban Pennsylvania, and then urban areas. So I think there's some parallel and just awareness that needs to take place.
Something that this conversation is reminding me of is, so Chinese New Year, Lunar New Year just passed, right? And a lot of people refer to it as Chinese New Year. And I recently saw something that said, you know, let's try to be more mindful to call it Lunar New Year, because a lot of different countries celebrate this. This is just another kind of iteration example of how we just kind of assume it's, you know, over there in Asia, they're doing this. Like, oh, it's a Chinese thing. Yeah, exactly. So, right, like, that's another kind of more timely example of, it's something that I think I myself are mindful of as well. It's not just, you know, people who aren't Asian identified, but I think even within the Asian community, when we, broadly speaking, Asian community, it's important for us as well to be mindful
Yeah, that brings us then, as we start to wrap up, like this intention too, that I definitely do not know anything close to everything, which is why we're so glad to have people who come from different backgrounds and different immigration statuses and life experiences to share more about those personal stories. Because even though each of our own personal stories are unique, that can also feel that much more relatable and intimate. And so I appreciate both of you sharing so much of yourselves so far. And I am actually really excited to speak more about these other themes that you all are excited about and boundaries. And there's so much more we have to chat about. And so I'll also invite you all to share how people can find you if they want to learn more about you or work with you, anything like that.
Thank you for hosting us and having us on the podcast. You can find both Anita and I on the agoodplacetherapy.com website under our team to find out more.
Yes, awesome. Thank you so much. This has been a fantastic first conversation. Look forward to more in the future.
Yeah, thank you both so much. We'll include all of your info in the description so people can find you easily. And if you have questions for us or for Anita and Tiffany, feel free to write to us. And on Instagram, we're at Bridges Mental Health. Talk to you all next week.